Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 3, Hiranyakashipu's plan to become immortal. So anyone who wants to become immortal, they can follow Hiranyakashipu's plan, see what happens. Actually, you'll find out what happens. So I'll read the chapter summary. This chapter describes how Hiranyakashipu performed a severe type of austerity for material benefit that's causing great distress throughout the universe. Even Lord Brahma, the chief personality within this universe, became somewhat disturbed and personally went to see why Hiranyakashipu was engaged in such a severe austerity. Hiranyakashipu wanted to become immortal. He wanted not to be conquered by anyone, not to be attacked by old age and disease, and not be harassed by any opponent. Thus he wanted to become the absolute ruler of the entire universe. With this desire, he entered the valley of Mandara Mountain, began to practicing a severe type of austerity and meditation. Seeing Hiranyakashipu engage in this austerity, the demigods returned to their respective homes, but while Hiranyakashipu was thus engaged, a kind of fire began blazing from his head, disturbing the entire universe and its inhabitants, including the birds, beasts, and demigods. When all the higher and lower planets became too hot to live on, the demigods, being disturbed, left their abodes in the higher planets and went to see Lord Brahma, praying to him that he could tell the unnecessary heat. So this is called global warming. The demigods disclosed to Lord Brahma Hiranyakashipu's ambition to become immortal, overcoming his short duration of life and be the master of all planetary systems, even Dhruvaloka. Upon hearing about the purpose of Hiranyakashipu's austere meditation, Lord Brahma, accompanied by the great sage Bhrigu and great personalities like Daksha, went to see Hiranyakashipu. He then sprinkled water from his common dalu type of water pot upon Hiranyakashipu's head. Hiranyakashipu, king of the Daityas, bowed down before Lord Brahma, the creator of this universe, offering respectful obeisances again and again, offering prayers. When Lord Brahma agreed to give him benedictions, he prayed not to be killed by any living entity, not to be killed in any place, covered or uncovered, not to die in the daytime or at night, not to be killed by any weapon on land or in air, and not to be killed by any human being, animal, demigod, or any other living, any other entity, living or non-living. He also prayed for his supremacy over the entire universe, requested the eight yogic perfections such as anima and lagima. Quite a shopping list. So text one, Shri Narada Uvacha. Hiranyakashipu Rajan Najayam Ajaramanaram Atmanam Apitid Dvandam Ekarajam Vyaditsata. Shri Narada Vacha. Narada Muni said, Hiranyakashipu, the demoniac king Hiranyakashipu, Rajan, O King Yudhishthira, Ajayam, unconquerable by any enemy, Ajara, without old age or disease, Amaram, immortal, Atmanam, himself, Apriti Dvandvam, without any rival or opponent, Ekarajam, the one king of the universe, Vyaditsata. Desire to become. Translation purported by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Narada Muni said to Maharaj Yudhisthira, the divine neck king Hiranyakashipu wanted to be unconquerable and free from old age and dwindling of the body. He wanted to gain all the yogic perfections like anima and lagima, to be deathless, and to be the only king of the entire universe, including Brahmaloka. Report. Such is the goals of the austerities performed by demons. Hiranyakashipu wanted to receive a benediction from Lord Brahma, so that in the future he'd be able to conquer Lord Brahma's abode. Similarly, another demon received a benediction from Lord Shiva, but later wanted to kill Lord Shiva through that same benediction. Thus, self-interested persons by demoniac austerity wanted to kill even their benedictors, whereas the Vaishnava wants to remain an everlasting servant of the Lord and never occupy the post of the Lord. Through Sayuja Mukti, which is generally demanded by asuras, one merges into the existence of the Lord, but although one may sometimes thus achieve the goal of the theory of monism, one falls down again to struggle to immaterial existence. Narada Muni said to Maharaj Yudhisthira, the demoniac king Hiranyakashipu wanted to be unconquerable and free from old age and dwindling of the body. He wanted to gain all the yogic perfections like anima and lagima, to be deathless, to be the only king of the entire universe, including Brahmaloka. Ritagana, prapadyante nidevata, tam tam nimam astayam prakriti niyatak svaya. Those who are blinded by lusty desires, they worship the demigods and trying to get their fruits of work. Yo yam 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 tanum bhakta, shradayarjitim ichanti, tasya tasya tram shradam, tam eva vididamyaham. But actually, although they're seemingly getting results from the demigods, but actually I'm in everyone's heart and the benedictions are coming from me. So one may imagine that one has surpassed the Supreme Lord and now is going to become a controller of the universe. But one doesn't realize that actually one is controlled in any circumstance, either by Krishna as the super soul within the heart, and one becomes Krishna's instrument and becomes liberated, or one becomes controlled by the modes of material nature, especially sleeping. Hare Krishna. Welcome. So in any case, we have to be controlled. Although, if you happen to be a gatekeeper of Vaikuntha and been serving Krishna for, well, I guess, eternally, you're a gatekeeper, then you have quite a bit of pious activities amassed. So if you do fall into the material world, they don't give you an ordinary position. You might become another Hiranyakashipu. And then you can control the whole universe, this tiny little universe. Of course, if you want to control more than one universe, I don't know what austerity you have to do. Very difficult to control even one universe. In any case, then they give you the eight mystic powers. Lord Brahma can give you all those powers and things like that. And you think, now I'm the controller. But Prahlad Maharaj will come along and say, Tatsaru manye suryavari deinam sadasama vigna diyamasat grahat hetvatmapitam griham andu kupam gato vanam yadari ashriyeta. My dear father, the best thing I've learned in school is that you're a number one fool. So he thought he was the control of the universe, but actually he was being controlled by lust, anger, and greed. And Krishna arranged it. Krishna arranges dramatic examples so that we can be impressed hopefully we become impressed. The only problem is we have to believe that these things actually happen, rather than they just some fairy tales made up by some sage in the Himalayas who is getting bored trying to, because there's no one around, there's no internet, his internet connection, didn't pay for it. So he was all by himself, and he looked around and he saw these vegetables, these herbs growing. He decided to experiment, and he found that they actually stimulated him. And his writing, he became a prolific writing, and part of that writing is Srimad Bhagavatam, part of his hallucinations. He was imagining demons half the size of the universe, people flying around on swans with four heads, people with three eyes, four arms. So this made for good reading, especially for the aborigines in India at that time, who had no scientific knowledge, who believed in gods. They became infatuated by these things, and now some dropouts from normal society have gotten together and discovered these books and are sitting around reading them. When they're not chanting the same thing over and over again to hypnotize themselves, then they're hearing these fairy tales. So people may think like that, and we may think like that too to a certain extent, because I don't think anyone here can remember meeting Hiranyakashipu. Hopefully we weren't on his side. We never even heard about Hiranyakashipu before we came to the movement. How could someone half the size of the universe go unnoticed? Didn't someone notice him? Well, he was so big no one could see him. No, the point is that to have faith in the scriptures that these things are actually going on, that there was such a person called Hiranyakashipu, and that there was a person with four heads coming down on a swan, giving him a benediction, that he could practically become almost immortal. That is actually not so difficult to understand if we just understand we don't know anything. In other words, if we think we actually know something, then we'll think that this couldn't possibly, this is quite strange. Unbelievable, practically. But then again, it's practically unbelievable that we're eternal and that we think we're going to die, that when this body dies, that the soul dies. So that's also unbelievable, that we could be so foolish that we actually believe that. That we've been going through so many bodies, even in this lifetime, at every moment, and yet we're not changing, and yet we think we're changing. Now our personalities hopefully are changing for the better rather than for the worse. Our perception, conception of things hopefully is becoming clearer of reality. Not necessarily though, but it's our conceptions are always changing. Our personalities are changing. When you're 5 years old, you have a 5-year-old personality. And when you're 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years old, you should have another personality. And maybe when you become 90 years old again, you have a 5-year-old personality. But in any case, the personality is always changing. Our body's changing. Our feelings, our conceptions are always changing. But the perceiver of all these experiences in the material world, ourselves, are always the same. So the conclusion is, if everything's changing except for ourselves, then the final change in this body won't change ourselves either. We're of a different energy. Still, we believe we're going to die when the body dies. We believe we're in trouble when the body's in trouble. If your car, someone hits your car and you think you've been hit, well, you have a misconception. You haven't been hit. It's your car that's been hit. Now, you may feel emotionally identified with a car, and as I said before, this identification is called ahamkara, that I am the car. So that carries over to this body. We're so absorbed in this bodily concept of life that we actually believe that the position of the body or the state of the body determines my position or state, because we don't look internally, we only look externally. When Hiranyaksha was killed by Lord Varaha, then Hiranyakashipu became very disturbed, and he was chasing after Varaha all over the universe to fight with him. But Lord Varaha realized that actually I'm not supposed to kill Hiranyakashipu. My incarnation of Nrisimhadeva is supposed to kill him. It's part of my pastime. So better I avoid him, because otherwise it wouldn't look good. So he couldn't find any place in the universe to hide, but he found one place in the universe to hide, which Hiranyakashipu could never find him. Is that nowhere? Was it? Yeah, he went into his heart, through his nostril, because he realized that the only place Hiranyakashipu would never look for God was in his heart. No introspective whatsoever. So similarly, the demons never really have any what's called thinking, proactive. That before they do something, they never consider the consequences. Proactive doesn't mean you just think ahead. It means that when you have some situation and you're trying to when you have choices to make, then you think about what would be the appropriate choice, rather than just stimuli and then you get the response like an animal. As human society becomes more animalistic, then they're only looking for material benedictions, never looking for what the purpose of life is or how to achieve it, because they don't know that they're eternal. They don't know that the most valuable thing would be to realize their eternality. If they realize they're eternal, then they have nothing more to worry about. And if they don't realize they're eternal, even if they get the whole universe, then they have even more to worry about. It's hard to run a family. Imagine running a universe. How much problems you have. If you do anything wrong, everyone's going to complain. You may think, well, there's so many devotees, who care if they complain? But you have a whole family of demons. They'll complain and get on your case if you make any mistake running the universe. So it's a difficult job. He wanted more responsibility, he wanted more control, but he was going to get a lot of complaints, a lot of anxiety and headaches. And if he could have lasted for the duration of the universe, he would have spent 311 trillion, 40 billion years getting complaints. And therefore we find, although he was seemingly free from all anxiety and fear, but still it was mentioned in the Bhagavatam, he was drinking heavy liquor, because he was full of anxiety. He wasn't worried about dying himself, but these other people all around him, they had so many things that they were expecting he was going to provide for them. They were his men, and therefore he had to serve them. He wanted to become God, and indeed they all treated him like God, but God also has to do things. He has to provide for his subordinates. Therefore, the best thing to become is a servant. If you want to get something from someone, then you become their servant. If you become their competitor, then you'll struggle. But if you become their servant, then they feel obliged to protect you and give you things, whatever, because that's what the master does. Prabodhananda Saraswati said that if you want to get a materialist to buy a book, then you go up to them with a straw in your teeth, between your teeth, and you tell them how great they are. You're the Alpha, you're the Omega, you're the most intelligent. Even God comes and takes advice from you. You're the greatest. So this person thinks, well, finally I met an intelligent person who sees things properly. So, since I'm God, maybe I should give him some benediction so he becomes more and more my devotee. So he asks you, since you accepted me as the Supreme, how can I serve you? How can I give you a benediction? So then you just tell them that, you know, please take this book and all your nonsense will go away. Of course, you don't say nonsense. Just buy this book. It's exactly what you need. This will help you become even greater than you already are, which is inconceivable. Therefore, people will accept flattery, and Hiranyakashipu, he indeed was flattered, but he was still full of anxiety, because it's hard to be the controller. Too much responsibility. The universe is so temporary, everything's changing, you can't be sure if people are going to carry out your orders, what's going on. Always bewildered, and therefore he was always intoxicated. Always angry, actually. And intoxicated, frustrated. In spite of the fact he had all mystic powers, he had control over all the demigods, even Dhruvaloka, still he wasn't happy. So, if we think we're going to be happy with a little house, and a wife, and a husband, and some children, and a job, if we think we're going to be happy like that, then we won't be happy. Because we won't understand where real happiness comes from. And we'll just struggle like everyone else. And then at the end wind up as little Hiranyakashipus. A little bit of soft bed, a little bit of gold, and a lot of anxiety. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
Hare Krishna. Sometimes we are accused of painting a very bleak picture and pessimistic picture of this life and world. And
why should we accuse? That's what we do. That's our business.
And then it seems that those who are householders are not inspired to work hard enough to maintain their family.
So, well, that's because they're an illusion. They think it's their family. They don't realize it's Krishna's family. And Krishna, they should work for Krishna's family, not for their family. They want to work for their family, then either they're a fool, covered by the illusory energy, and that thing is theirs, and it'll be taken away from them shortly, including their own dear body. Or they understand it's Krishna's body, it's Krishna's family. And as an instrument of Krishna, then one serves one's wife and children and society, all living entities. Therefore, that's the Veda culture. That for the householder in our house, even if there's a spider, the householder has to make sure the spider gets fed. It's different. We're not offering a vision of becoming neglectful. We're offering a vision of becoming responsible for Krishna. Therefore, Prabhupada, at 80 years old, he said, I'm able to work more than you are. You're 20 years old. I'm working harder than you are because I'm working for Krishna. Therefore, there's no end to my service. And you, as soon as your belly is filled up, you're asleep. That's the difference. Anything else?
Hare Krishna. How to talk about Krishna to people who don't know nothing about Krishna?
You don't talk about Krishna to people who know nothing about Krishna. Because they won't be able to hear. You have to talk about what they can understand. To introduce Krishna is rather presumptuous that we even understand Krishna enough to explain it to someone who doesn't know Krishna. But we can tell people about, it depends who they are, what the difference between their body and the soul is. If they can't understand that, they have no intelligence to understand anything else, spiritually. They can't understand that their body's changing, which I think everyone has experience of. I mean, I'm sure everyone has experience of a changing body. And everyone knows that they haven't changed. Otherwise, how could they remember being a baby? If they can't understand that, then there's no sense of explaining anything spiritual to them. Then the conversation becomes how human society should be organized to get the maximum amount of peace and happiness here, called Vanashram. That cleanliness, mercy, truthfulness, austerity, that these are qualities that should be developed in human society. If they can't understand that, then give them some prasadam. Try and sell them a book. Go on to the next person. Depends. I mean, if they know nothing about God, they've been probably, you know, they were born in a rabbit hole somewhere. I mean, what can you explain to them? You have to explain something within their experience. Prabhupada did that for Professor Katoski. He didn't talk about Krishna. Well, the only thing he said about Krishna, he said that there's no difference between your philosophy to Professor Katoski, who couldn't, and the head of the University of Moscow, communist. He said, actually, he tried to explain the difference between the body and the soul. He couldn't understand that. He tried to explain Vanashram, that we should develop people, you know, first-class men, bring people to stage of intelligence. He couldn't understand that. And he said, finally, Prabhupada said, there's no real difference between your philosophy and our philosophy. Your philosophy is to follow Lenin, and our philosophy is to follow Krishna. So it's the same philosophy. You have to choose someone and follow them, and then you wind up wherever they are. And then after that, Prabhupada just asked for a taxi. So we have to see what's effective. What are we trying to accomplish by talking to someone? I mean, how can you convince people that Krishna is God in 5 minutes? We're not even convinced after 15 years. But maybe we have some insight that we're not this body, and maybe we understand there must be a God, and Krishna is the most likely candidate. So if you wanted to say something, you can say, well, what is your definition? Ask them, what's your definition? Who do you think is supreme? Who do you think is there any person who's supreme? There must be someone who's supreme. Who is it? And what makes them supreme? So you can give them, well, our definition of the supreme, it's a person who has all beauty, all knowledge, all strength, all fame, all wealth, and all renunciation. The source of all these things. That person would be supreme. That's why we call him Krishna. If they can't understand that, then what can you say? Either they're not listening, or there's nothing in the brain to listen with. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantharaya Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.